on everybody. I'm mute. No. I see that everybody attending this meeting already knows Nico. Well, it's all the names. I see all the participants knows Nico, who did the PhD at the YEPI, and then moved for a postdoc the group of Peter Schneider in Bonn, and then he arrived at LAM with a CNES fellowship, right, Nico? You know the format, Nico, so please, we have the 30 minutes starting from now, including questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and hello, everyone. So, can you hear me well? And do you see
very
my
well.
Mouth? You see my mouth also?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So it's a pleasure to give our Cafe Club today. I will talk about recent work on probing dark energy with tomographic weak lensing upper trauma statistics. But before going into the details of this analysis, I will put some context. And as usual, feel free to interrupt me and ask questions during the talks if you have some. So we start with the classical scenario of evolution of our universe from the Big Bang to the present day, with the evolution of the size of the universe that is represented here. And in this scenario, there are a few parameters, cosmological parameters, that we can measure with cosmic shear, and that are of interest to improve our knowledge on cosmology. So the first one is the so-called, so-called sigma 8 parameter, the structure growth parameter. So if you look to the constraints that we can get in this sigma 8 omega matter plane, so sigma 8 quantifies the clustering of matter, and omega matter is the amount of matter in our universe. You see from cosmic shear here, the green banana, and from the Planck survey, this red ellipse. And you see that there is some tension about two sigma in between those two surveys, which is quite interesting for us. You can also see this in this parameter S8, that is a combination of sigma 8 and omega matter, perpendicularly to the main lensing degeneracy. And why are we interested in this so-called tension? Also, it is very small. This is because the CMB with the Planck survey is probing the late universe, or early universe, at a redshift of about 1,000, while cosmic shear is probing the recent universe close to us, redshift between 0 and 3. And if there are some differences in the constraints that we can put on our cosmological model from the late time and early time universe, it means that there is probably something that we don't understand in the evolution of our universe. And this is very interesting because it opens a new window for extra physics that we don't know yet. And the other parameter that we are interested in is the dark energy equation of state, which is linked to the accelerated expansion of our universe. So you can see on the right the constraints that we expect to get with Euclid on this parameter. So just to remind you, the equation of state simply links the pressure of dark energy to the density of dark energy, with one fixed parameter and one parameter that depends on the scale factor or equivalently on the redshift. So what we mostly focus usually on is this W naught value, because if W naught is equal to -1, this is consistent with a cosmological constant in the equation of our universe to explain the accelerated expansion. But if we measure any deviation from this value of -1, it probably means that dark energy is real and there is this dark fluid everywhere in our universe, and we will need to understand what it is made of. And cosmic shear is also very well adapted to measure this accelerated expansion, because we probe exactly the time where you see the accelerated increase of the size of the universe. Okay, so as I said, the cosmic shear is a nice probe to probe those two parameters you are interested in. So what is cosmic shear? It corresponds to the weak gravitational lensing effect due to the large-scale structure. So if you take any galaxy here in the cosmic web, the light that it emits is deflected by the gravitational potential of the structures along the line of sight. And the result of this is to distort the shape of the galaxy, a distortion that we call the shear. And by measuring the statistics of these distortions, we can probe the matter distribution of the large scale structure, so in our universe, and then our cosmological model. And cosmic shear is really going to be the major probe, cosmological probe, in the near future due to these new facilities that will start very soon. So Euclid, that will be launched in 2022. LSST, that will have its first light in 2021, and WFIRST, that should be launched around 2025. So we'll have really a lot of cosmic shear data to analyze in the next decade. So a standard estimator to measure to probe the cosmic shear is the shear two-point correlation functions. So you look at pairs of galaxies here, and you measure the coherent distortion between between these pairs. but I argue that we can do better by developing some other statistics that we call the non-Gaussian statistics. And you can see a sketch here on the right plot of the evolution of the matter distribution with redshift. So at high redshift here in red, you have a matter distribution which is consistent with a Gaussian distribution. This is due to the quantum fluctuation that are frozen during the inflation at the very beginning of the universe. But when the matter evolves, it develops some non-Gaussianity due to non-linear accretion of structures on small scales. And you see here that at low redshift, the blue curve, the distribution of mass is not Gaussian at all anymore, and you have a strong non-Gaussianity here at the high mass due to the accretion. And the two-point correlation functions, so the standard estimator, is a complete description of a Gaussian distribution, but not at all of a non-Gaussian distribution. So we lose all of the information that is here encapsulated in the tail of the matter distribution. And for historical reason, we still use two-point statistics, and that's what we will do with all of this coming cosmic shear data. And a large part of my work is to develop these non-Gaussian statistics and to show that they perform much better than the two-point statistics. So I'll show you how we conduct cosmic shear analysis, first focusing on the standard shear two-point correlation functions, and then I will move on to use some non-Gaussian statistics. So you start with an observation. Here it's an image, a color image from the KIT survey. From this, you can measure two observable quantities, the ellipticities of galaxies, which carry the shear signal, the distortion that you want to measure, and the photometric redshift of galaxies, thanks to the multi-wavelength analysis. With your redshifts, you can set some tomographic bins to recover the information on the third dimension. You have four tomographic bins that we created for KIDS. You calibrate the redshift distribution with spectroscopy, because you need to have accurate redshift distribution, as the lensing is a property that depends both on distances and mass along the line of sight. And then with the ellipticities, you measure one estimator. Most often, it's the shear two-point correlation function, psi plus minus, that are represented here, and measure the coherent distortion between pairs of galaxies here, A and B. You have here an example of this two-point correlation function. You have the non-tomographic terms here, 1-1, where you compute the correlation between pairs of galaxies in the first slide of redshift, then in the second slide of redshift, 2-2, and etc. So those are what we call the autocorrelation, and you also have what we call the cross-correlation, here terms 1-2, for example, where you take one galaxy from the first slice of redshift and one from the second slice of redshift to compute the correlations. One nice thing about Xi plus minus is that you can theoretically predict the revolution with cosmology. In fact, Xi plus and minus are an integral of the matter-power spectrum with the Bessel function, with also the redshifts that intervene in this equation. So if you feed your theoretical models with a set of cosmological parameters and with the redshift distribution that you measure, you can predict the shear two-point correlation functions at many cosmology, and then you find the cosmology that best represents your data, which gives you your cosmological parameter estimates on, for example, S8 and W0, the parameters we are interested in today. You also have to marginalize over a set of systematic biases that I won't describe today, but you have biases in the measure of the shear, so of the distortion of the galaxies, in the measure of the redshifts. You have some other physical systematic biases, like intrinsic alignment, the fact that galaxies might have preferential alignment, for example, satellite galaxies, that would mimic a shear signal, and the baryonic effect, because these theoretical predictions are valid only in the case of dark matter only universe. Okay, so that's how we do cosmic shear analysis with shear two-point correlation function. Now I switch with doing it with my favorite probe, which are the mass maps. So what changes from the previous plot is simply the estimator and the theoretical prediction. So all the rest remain the same. Instead of computing the shear two-point correlation function from pair of galaxies, we compute a mass map using thousands of ellipticities of galaxies to compute each pixel. And then we developed one statistics of the mass map. Usually we take the number of peaks, which is similar to the number of clusters in the universe. And the downside of this new estimators is that we cannot theoretically predict them accurately. And this is because we lack some understanding about the nonlinear growth of structures on a theoretical point of view. So we rely on n-body simulations. We have to run n-body simulations for different cosmological parameters in order to create our model and to compare with the observed mass map, and we get the cosmological parameter very similarly to the classical method. So that's what we did about 2 years ago in the first 450 square degrees of KIDS. So you can see 1 square degree mass map on the left here, with the high signal to noise peaks being the black circles. You also have some clusters represented as stars here. And you see that the peaks in mass maps include the galaxy clusters, which corresponds to very high signal to noise ratio peaks. But you also have some additional information which corresponds to chance alignment of halos along the line of sight. And you also have a lot of noise. There are a lot of low signal to noise peaks here that are only due to the noise in your data. And by measuring the number of peaks or the peak distribution in different simulations with different cosmological parameters, we managed to constrain the parameter S sigma 8 and omega matter. Those are the blue contours that you can see here on the right. And by combining the blue contours, so the peaks with the green contours, the shear two-point correlation function, we showed that we gain about 20% on the accuracy on the parameter S8. So this demonstrates that we really recover this non-Gaussian information, and that the mass maps carries more information than the shear two-point correlation function. So that was the status, I would say, state of the art about 2 years ago. And since then, we improved on several aspects and released a paper about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, maybe, that I will present today and that you can find also on archive. So this work has been conducted with Joachim Arnaud Desrapes in the UK, Eric at LAM, and Peter Schneider in Germany. So there are three major points we wanted to improve on. First, we wanted to generalize the peak statistics to what we call the aperture mass statistics. So not only looking at the peaks, but also maybe the full distribution of pixels in the mass map. We wanted also to develop a robust tomographic approach. So far there are no tomographic mass map based studies on observations. And we also wanted to probe the dark energy equation of states and to make some forecasts for Euclid on this parameter. Okay, so how do we proceed in this analysis? For computing our model, we use a new set of cosmological n-body simulations, the Cosmos SLICS, where you can see here all of the parameters that we probe. So the famous SA parameter, H, which is the Hubble reduced parameter, W naught, the dark energy equation of state, and omega matter, the density of matter in the universe. So we have 25 different simulations, and each of the points here represent one simulation and the associated parameters in the cosmological parameter space. For each of these simulation, we reconstruct an aperture mass map using this equation. I won't really go into the details of the mass map, but we can come back on this later. It's an averaging of the tangential ellipticities of galaxy with respect to the center of the aperture, with a Q filter here, which is compensated in the convergence space, which means that usually when you want to compute the mass, you need to integrate the shear. And if you use a compensated filter, the constant from the integration vanishes. So that's why we use this particular aperture mass statistics. And then you compute several statistics. So the distribution of some pixel values in your mass map as a function of signal to noise. So in green, you see again the peaks that I presented before. You can also look at the voids, the minima in your mass map, or look at what I call here the 1D map in red, the full distribution of pixel in your mass map. Now I go on with the tomography. So first I need to introduce you the state of the art of tomography today, or at least a few months ago. This is an analysis from Zürcher et al. 2020, in the where they do peak prediction for the death year 3 analysis that will probably be released in 1 or 2 years from now. And those three plots shows the constraints in the sigma 8 omega matter plane. For first, what they call CL is a 2-point estimator, PC is a peak cons, and then the combination of both. The blue contours are without tomography, and the purple contour includes the tomography. And you see, first focusing on the blue contours, that most of the information in the combined probes is very similar to the information in the peak cons. This means that in the non-tomographic case, most of the information comes from the peak cons and not so much from the two-point correlation functions. But if you go to the tomography now in purple, you see that it's really a combination of what you gain from the peaks and what you gain from the correlation function. So we gain about 25% by adding the peaks on the SA parameter. But they also note that you gain much less from tomography in the case of peaks than for the two-point statistics. And this is because in the standard way of applying tomography to mass maps, we don't use cross-correlation. So that's what we usually do. Here I represent some 1-square degree mass maps for all galaxies in a map, and then for 5 different redshift slices. And here you use only autocorrelation terms because you use only the distribution of peaks in each of these 5 slices. And so we improve on this by developing some cross terms in between maps by reconstructing the mass maps from combined redshift slices. So here, the combination of Z2 and Z3, Z2 and Z4, and then here for three different redshift bins. So, and there are many, many other terms. And in that way, we recover the information due to the position of structures in between these slices, which will improve our tomography the same way that the cross-correlation improves the shear two-point correlation function compared to the autocorrelation. So let's see how we perform. This is a plot of the precision that we forecast for 100 square degrees of Euclid MOX on S8 as a function of the number of tomographic slices that we use. The dotted lines correspond to the classical tomography, including only the autocorrelation, the auto terms, and the solid line to the new tomography, including also the cross terms. The different colors are for the different data vectors that we measured, and the black dots correspond to the shear to bone correlation function, the color dot to the combination of shear to bone correlation function with the same color statistics. So if you first focus on the old tomography setup, the dotted line, you see that the information saturates very rapidly around two or three slices of redshift. And this is because what you gain is mostly that you remove the foreground galaxies that are not lensed. But once we use our new tomography setup, you see that we keep gaining information as long as we improve, increase the number of tomographic slices and recover this cross-term information. The constraints are improved by about 50% compared to using the standard tomography. You can also note, if you look to the difference between the combination of probes and the shear to bone correlation function, that it's very similar in the five tomographic case than in the no tomographic case, one slice. So which means that we really recover these cross terms and we now gain as much with mass maps with tomographies and without tomography. We also made some forecasts on S8 with the old tomography setup that are in very good agreement with the 25% improvement that Zürcher et al. Found in 2020. But this forecast jumps to about 50% improvement once we include our new tomography and also focus on 1D map. So we forecast constraints that are twice better when including both shear-to-bone correlation function and aperture mass statistics compared to shear-to-bone correlation function alone. And finally, we also made the first combined forecast on dark energy equation of state W0. So here I represent the likelihood, 1D likelihood and 2D likelihood in the different parameter by marginalizing over other parameters. And you see in black, the shear to bone correlation function, in green, the 1D map, and in purple, the combination of both. And especially if you look to the 1D constraints on W0, you see that we have a huge increase in precision thanks to this 1D map, including the cross-term tomography. The improvement is of about 70%, which means that we have three times better constraints than with the shear-to-bone correlation function alone, because we recover all of this non-Gaussian information that was not possible with the standard estimators. So this leads me to my conclusion. We developed a new aperture mass tomography, which now includes these cross terms and which can be directly combined with shear-to-bone correlation functions. And we found that our combined constraints are twice better on S8 than the shear-to-bone correlation function alone, and three times better on W0. So this suggests that the non-Gaussian part of the matter distribution is also highly sensitive to dark energy, and not only to the structure growth parameters. And it shows also a huge potential for cosmology. So three times better on W0 means that with the first data release of Euclid, if we apply this new method, will be as good as with the final data release of Euclid 6 years later. So it's really a huge improvement, and we need to prepare for it because it's also more complicated and it requires a proper modeling of the systematics and also a dedicated run of a few thousands of n-body simulations to have an accurate model in the case of the map statistics. And I finish with some advertisement for a focus meeting that we organize at the General Assembly of the IAU in 2021, which is called Consensus Cosmic Shear in the 2020s. You have the website here if you want to have a look to the program. And the idea is really to do the sum of the knowledge that we have today on cosmic shear and to get prepared for this new decade with all of these new surveys that are coming and also these new methods like aperture mass statistics that proves to be better than the standard ones. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Nico. Is there any questions? I have a lot. Okay, I start with a question. Could you comment a bit more about the impact of the baryonic physics? Actually, let me phrase in another way. First of all, which is the physical reason of the shrinked contours in the sigma 8 omega m planes when considering the peak counts? And how do baryonic physics modify this plot?
So again, from the non-Gaussian information of the matter distribution. So with the two-point correlation function, you only probe the Gaussian information, and the distribution of matter today is not Gaussian at all. So you lose a lot of information because you use you don't use the optimal statistics to probe your data. So that's where you gain. And more precisely, in the sigma 8 omega matter contours, you also have a shift in the ellipse of the parameter space of the banana that I showed at the beginning, which when you combine both gives extra information.
Okay.
And for the
please go ahead.
Okay, and for the baryons, so you indeed need to include the baryons, and as you cannot model properly the aperture mass statistics, you need to rely on hydrodynamical simulation, and that's something that we are working on right now with Eric, and actually a paper that will hopefully come before the end of the year, where we use the magneticum hydrodynamical simulations to estimate the impact of baryons on different aperture mass statistics. Does it answer your question?
Let me think about in the meanwhile, I see a couple of questions, Matt, and then Mathieu. Please, Matt.
Yeah, thanks. So I have probably quite a basic question, but I'll ask anyway. So just to make sure I understand. The value of combining different redshift slices allows one to diminish or change the effect of alignment. Is that correct statement? Am I understanding this correctly? So basically, if you're in the same redshift slice, you can include the contribution of alignments.
In this analysis, we don't include any bias, so there is no intrinsic alignment. What you say is true, that different slices, if you use different slices, you will have different intrinsic alignments, but you also have some specific case, what we call the gravitational intrinsic alignment, which correlates the intrinsic shape of galaxies with the shear of background galaxies. And this, you won't get rid of it, even if you do multiple tomographic slices.
Sorry, what I meant was the cross correlation between redshift slices. So the 2-1-3-1 rather than the 1-1-2-2-3-3.
Okay, so that improves your constraints, because if you use only the standard autocorrelation, you lose the information of the relative position between the structures in the different slices. So for example, if you take the 1D distribution of pixel in the second map and the third map, you lose the relation between this structure and this structure. While when you include both, you see that the correlation is retained in between the position of the structure. And that's the extra information that you get. At least we think that's the extra information that you get from this new tomography setup.
Okay, I think I understand. Okay, thanks.
Mathieu?
Yeah, and I have a question about the peak method and the systematics, a bit of follow-up of my few questions. Since you're looking at the peaks, it's more extremum statistics, so is it not more sensitive than the power spectrum, which is a sort of mean statistics when you look at all systematics and potential errors? Is there simulation to quantify all these systematics? You partially answered the question, but...
First, I'm not looking only at peaks. So peaks is what most people in the field were doing so far, but we found out that 1D map, the full distribution of pixel, actually carries more information than the peaks, because it also includes the voids and any structure in the maps. So we also have some mean quantities here. Then the different systematic biases will indeed impact differently the different statistics. For example, if you look to the baryons, you know that it's mostly happening at small scales because of the AGN feedback. So the mass maps or the peaks, especially the peaks, for example, will be very much affected by baryon feedback compared to other other statistics. So you need to include them properly. But on the other side, intrinsic alignments are something quite big in shear two-point correlation function, because you have only two galaxies at a time. So if they are aligned, it breaks all of your shear signal. But in the mass maps or and the peaks, you average the ellipticities of hundreds or thousands of galaxies, which strongly diminish the impact of intrinsic alignment. So it really depends. The systematics are different from the different methods.
Yeah, it's super clear. So it was a naive question. I don't know Lansing that much, but
No. So you know, it's most of the analysis that are done now is working on systematics.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
More than half of the papers on cosmic shear and systematics. So it's not naive at all. It's what we are doing most of the time. It's not what's the most fun, but that's what most of the time we are doing.
It looks like a bit the PFD analysis we use for action. You know, you just look at the histogram of the map rather than trying to extract individual galaxies in the crappy beam. But the thing is terrifying how many systematics you have when you do that, because there's so many weird things happening because galaxies are imperfect and mimic stuff. And so that's why my question. But anyway, it's beautiful. Let's hope that will be the method which will tell us about dark energy. Finger crossed.
There's a question from Guillaume.
Yes. Thank you very much for your nice presentation. So my question is about you. For example, in your slide 17, where you show mass map, there is a SNR. What is SNR? Is a kind of overdensity or?
Yeah, it's a signal to noise ratio of the mass maps. So
okay.
I didn't go into the details of how we compute the maps because it's quite technical.
Yeah.
And not necessarily what you will be interested in. But here with this aperture mass estimator, mm-hmm. that also define local noise by using only the intrinsic ellipticity.
So you also create a noise?
Yeah.
In order to get your
map. The maps. And noise map, and then you divide one by the other to get the signal to noise ratio.
Okay. And the noise is what a kind of Poisson process or?
No, the noise is computed by randomly rotating the ellipticities of the galaxy. So you destroy your shear signal.
Yeah.
You compute the map, which is only due to the intrinsic shapes, what we call the shape noise.
Okay. Thank you.
But if you have intrinsic alignment, can it increase your variance? If basically things in the same area of the sky are sort of aligned naturally, you could have sort of bunching effect, which would increase the variance compared to random, like decorrelated.
I don't think the intrinsic alignment will affect much the covariance. It will more be a bias to the cosmological constraints.
Maybe on very small scales.
Yeah, you could imagine an extreme case where, I don't know, half of the things are aligned in one part of the sky and half, like an extreme case. No, but basically the drawings would not be independent, so basically you could not assume independent statistics. Like a little bit, it's in Kantian cell because of galaxy clustering, but with alignment, it's not as intuitive, I think.
Yeah, the difference with galaxy clustering is that you don't need randoms here. You assume that your ellipticity is average to zero, which is quite fair for a statistical point of view. Intrinsic alignment will only bias your data vector when measuring the full cosmological constraint. But I think you can neglect it in the covariance.
Yeah. No, I was thinking just of Kantian cell. You know, if you just count objects in a given flux function, as soon as you have a big field and lots of galaxies, you're way above Poisson in terms of variance. That was my question. But yeah, with the alignment, it's not working the same way.
Any more comment or question? If not, I think we can stop here, just an advertisement for next week. We will have a seminar, exceptionally by a PhD student from Caltech, so to arrange the time. It will be at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. So thank you.
Just a little thing, Carlo. We just discussed during the coffee to reactivate the Galaxy Evolution Circle, but the idea would be to open it to other JCO topics, except topics which are already circle active, but just to have, in order the cafe club, you can invite external people to have outside life, I would say, something like that. But to allow PhD students and people to make short talks or journal club talks on Monday. So just send a message. So anyone motivated to either organize or discuss something in the next weeks, welcome. So Carlo, we should discuss basically about how to articulate with the Coffee Club, which is a longer talk. But the idea would be to use these two tools. So it would be on Monday to basically keep scientific life during confinement. So sure. Just to advertise. Thank you.
Thank you too, Mathieu. Well, thank you, everybody, and see you soon online.